The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Welcome again to our show. We have another very, very special show for you today. And the topic is The Last War, Racism and Spirituality. Well, you know, the Roman Empire did not colorize the person. Can you believe that? Rome is arguably the roots of Western civilization. Slavery did exist, but not with the racism we know of today. Any form of racism is bad. We know that. But the world hadn't seen anything yet until bestial slavery began in the 15th century. Exactly what deadly mix of elements and circumstances spawned a new form of slavery that still haunts us today? It's not just economics. We hear that it's economics, but it's not just economics. How can we untangle this violent web and untangle it faster? Can politics do it? Can the legal system do it? How about thriving materialism? Religion alone hasn't done it yet. Can researchers pinpoint the form of dehumanization before bestial slavery that led to hyper-racism? That's right, hyper-racism. What were the drivers in Europe that rationalized a worse form of racism? Maybe we can connect the dots. Well, our guest today is Dr. Mark Perry. He earned his master's degree in cultural anthropology and a doctorate in the history of culture from the University of Chicago. His bachelor's degree is from Haverford College and is in physics and music. What a combination. Originally from Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, where he grew up as in an interracial family, he has lived 2 years in Africa and 12 years in the Middle East. His study of race issues led to a more fundamental question. How can human beings, high technology, and nature converge in a sustainable, ever-evolving civilization? Well, convergence is the subject of his next book, but we really want to talk to Dr. Mark Perry about The Last War, Racism, Spirituality, and the Future of Civilization. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you so much, Sharon.
Well, I'm delighted that you've been able to join us. And, you know, Dr. Perry, we are not going to get through all of the wealth of information that's in your book, The Last War, Racism, Spirituality, and the Future of Civilization.
I can understand that. Yeah, there's so much to talk about in our history. So what I was trying to do in the book was boil it down. And as I was boiling it down, I realized there's so much that has to be detailed, we can't really avoid it. But hopefully in our conversation, we can touch on some of the main points.
I think that we will. And, you know, I would really like to know this, and I think our listening audience would too. Why are you even interested in this subject? What caused your research interest or just your interest as a person in this topic of race, spirituality, and the future of civilization?
Well, when I was growing up in Swarthmore, outside Philadelphia, I was living in a town that was mostly white, and our family was interracial. And for most of that time, I just kind of ignored the race issue. I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to talk about it with anybody. And but as I got older, as I became a teenager, I started to realize, well, there's no escaping this thing. I'm now kind of in a situation where the adults and the institutions are going to look at me not as Mark, but as this brown kid, and all of the associations with brown skin are going to be loaded on my shoulders. And so, but even then, I kind of put it to the back of my mind until I had a course in sociology that I had to take to fulfill a requirement at college, and it was in the last semester of my college. And my professor touched on the race issue for part of the course. Mm-hmm. And that really opened my eyes. I didn't even know that there was a field of study where you could talk about race as a problem in society. So it was sort of like a therapy session, and I thought, wow, here's an opening, here's a way that I can actually look at what's bothering me and not hide it. So I decided to go into graduate school and study that.
Well, you also studied music and physics and anthropology. That's quite a mix here. So is that what led to the sociology part of it, was discovery?
Well, when I was studying music, I was intending to become a musician, but as I got towards the end of my undergraduate studies, I started to think more and more about what was causing people's suffering, and I started to realize that however smart my professors were and brilliant and they had published and, you know, they were prominent in their fields, I was always wondering, why can't they solve the problems of the world? And at that time, I was an atheist. I did not believe in any religion, and I did not believe in God, and I did not believe in, you know, most ideologies that are out there, or any ideology, really. But I kept thinking, if we just become smart enough, we'll be able to solve our problems. It should be fairly straightforward. But by the time I was leaving college, I realized the professors have not solved anything, so why haven't they? And it seemed that, you know, the easy approach would be to just go straight forward to the hardest problems first and start to unravel them. And that's when I realized, well, we're in trouble, because the smartest people are not willing to deal with it. And so I asked myself, well, why aren't you willing to deal with it, Mark? What's your problem? And that's what made me really stop and think about whether I should be a musician and work on art, or should I work on something more directly related to the problems around me. And I went into graduate school purely for my own interest. I wasn't planning to become a professor or a scholar. I just wanted to kind of solve some problems on my own. And the more I looked at social problems and specifically racial problems, the more I started to dig deeper and deeper and uncover some things that I hadn't known and weren't talked about in the textbooks.
Well, you know, you've hit one of my hot buttons here, Mark, because, you know, of all of the great educational institutions that we have in this country, in the United States, and that this particular topic, which has plagued us for just generations and generations, rarely, I mean, it's getting a little better, but rarely do we see a lot of emphasis on how to resolve the issue related to race that really is one of the most prominent social issues that we have. So that was your takeaway, that you were hoping maybe that professors could solve this or somehow untangle it, but they didn't.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, I don't want to sound too negative, because I am, you know, the first person to say that higher education is critical to any society, and we've all benefited from all the work that social scientists and scientists and artists have done in academia. But there is a certain element of academia that seems to be self-defeating and counterproductive, and I started to realize that one of the things that these very intelligent professors would be able to do as a great service to society is to look at themselves, look at their own institutions, and ask themselves, well, why are we you know, so powerful here at Harvard and at Columbia and at Yale and so many other great universities. And yet around us, we have slums and we have poverty and we have extreme dysfunction. Why can't we at least start with the communities around us and try to fix some of those problems? So I became disillusioned with professors, but at the same time I realized that university education can open doors in people's minds. So I went into my graduate studies with a fairly open mind, and I decided to make the best of it and to take advantage of all the great resources and talking with people, not only the professors but other students, and just share ideas and clash opinions and try to find my way through this kind of this forest where people are focused on trees and not on the big picture. So the specialized study that we go through in whatever field you choose in graduate school, that's great. But I was actually doing a different path. I was looking at the specializations, but trying to draw the camera back farther and farther so I could see the forest instead of just the individual trees.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
We might be having a slight technical problem here. I think we're okay. Okay. Well, you know, Mark, this is more than intriguing because I can't imagine that you were the most popular person for a while trying to deal with this subject.
That's right. Well, I wasn't really able to do what I wanted to do in graduate school, and I had to change departments a couple of times because I realized I wasn't going to be able to get the support that I needed from my graduate professors. But eventually, I landed in an interdisciplinary program that gave me the freedom that I needed to work on this issue. But it was even after graduate school that I really was able to do most of what I wanted. So actually outside academia, I was more free to write what became The Last War.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so glad that you did. Now, we're going to be going to a break in just a moment here. But, you know, you've kind of opened a door here, and I wanted to explore that a little bit. So here you are as a person who started out this project as an atheist, but you're writing a book on racism and spirituality. Are you still an atheist?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, in the middle of my graduate studies in Chicago, I decided to go up to the Baha'i House of Worship in Wilmette, which is just in the suburbs, because my mother is a Baha'i, and I was brought up as a Baha'i till I was about 12. And then I told her, I don't really believe in religion because none of my friends are religious, so I wanted to be like them. Mm-hmm. And she knew that I was unhappy in graduate school. I wasn't getting the kind of wisdom that I thought I would from my professors, and I told her and my dad that I was going to quit graduate school at the end of my first year. And she just said, well, why don't you go up to the House of Worship one time before you leave Chicago? And I did, and I had already been planning to do that. And I was so impressed by the spirituality of the words that are carved into the side of the building. These are quotes from Baha'u'llah, the founder of the Baha'i faith. And that just sort of touched my heart, and I wasn't interested in joining any religion, but I started to get more of a sense that there is something other than pure logic and reasoning. And I started reading books about Hinduism and about Native American traditions, and I started to be feeling very confident that spirituality is a reality. And eventually I did become a member of the Baha'i faith, and I've kept that principle in my social science work.
That is just amazing. Well, you know, we're going to go to break, and we're going to be right back with Dr. Mark Perry.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, Tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story, coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to our show. Our guest today is Dr. Mark Perry. The topic is The Last War, Racism and Spirituality. Well, Dr. Perry, now we have a chance to kind of dig into some details here, because I know from your book that Rome did not necessarily colorize people during that period of time. And it kind of begs the question that maybe, just maybe, racism wasn't always with us. Can you kind of sort that out and its relationship to slavery and enslavement for us?
Sure. I came across a fact when I was starting to look at the history of slavery in the United States, and it always stuck in my mind, especially that I had come from an interracial family. And I found that in the early 1600s, when Africans first were brought to the Americas to work on plantations, they were not enslaved, and they had the freedom to marry Europeans who were also brought to work on the plantations. And so that made me question, well, where did this all begin? If there wasn't an animosity between white and black at the beginning of the colonies, when and where did it start? And so I looked further and further back to see if the ancient civilizations had this practice. And there is a very well-known professor, Frank Snowden, who was at Howard University, if I'm not mistaken, and he wrote a couple of very important books about this topic, and he made it crystal clear that neither the Greeks nor the Romans had what we now consider a racialized mentality. They did not consider race as the defining feature of people. And although they did have slavery, they did not base that slavery on the skin color of people. And in fact, he makes it a very good point that the Greeks actually honored people from Africa. And he gives a number of quotes showing that the Greeks, and apparently the Romans as well, were admiring people from Africa and associating them even with the gods. There's a quote about the gods coming down to dine with the noble Ethiopians. So when I started to read that, I realized, well, then this whole idea of race as being natural, as being inevitable, as being universal, a universal divider of people, that is purely a myth. And so I started to readjust the timeline of this whole concept of race. It is not an ancient universal thing. It's something actually quite modern. And that's what led me to analyze the legal process in Virginia and Maryland, where this idea of race was created whole cloth.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, okay, like I said, every time you say something or talk about something, Dr. Perry, it makes me want to know more questions. And so is this to say this myth about that racism didn't exist in the maybe what's considered the cradle of Western civilization in Rome and in Greece? I want to make sure we've got this right.
Right. Yes, it's there was prejudice against outsiders, or what we might call barbarians, quote-unquote, people who were not citizens of Rome, and there were prejudices against people of different classes. But what we consider racial prejudice, meaning a kind of legal status and an animosity against people of different colors, and particularly a prohibition against marriage or sexual relations with people of different colors, that did not exist as we know it now. There was no systematic prohibition in the communication and the socializing between people from Africa and people from Europe or from the Roman Empire. And so that helps explain why there was a lot of mixing of people in the Roman Empire. People, we often realize that in the ancient Roman Empire, people were not blonde-haired and blue-eyed, and the population in the great city of Rome, the capital, was very, very mixed. And even to this day, a lot of people associate the Romans with darker skin because they were from the Mediterranean world. Uh-huh. And the Mediterranean world as a whole was a very mixed population all the way around that Mediterranean Sea. People were mixing. And that's because there was no specific and systematized belief in racial separation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, we could have a whole show on just this part of your work, along with others too, but this part of your work, because what it says in effect, and please course correct me here, what it says in effect, that something happened and we got into this ditch, and that if we got into this ditch, we can get out. But something happened that caused racism to surge and be a part of everyday systems, everyday relationships. Can you talk a little bit about that? What happened?
Yes, you put it very well. What is it that happened? When I looked at the beginning of slavery in the United States, I started to recognize a pattern, which is that the men who made the laws on which slavery was based in Virginia and Maryland and a few other places really had to justify what they were doing because it was against Christianity, and all of them were Christians. They identified themselves as Christians. And so this was a problem. This was a psychological problem. This was a spiritual problem for them. It was difficult to claim that you were a Christian and a follower of Jesus and a practitioner of his teachings, and yet at the same time write these laws that enabled the state and the plantation owners to treat other human beings as animals. Mm-hmm. And to own them and to separate them from their families. This was a clear contradiction of Christian teaching, and it was very difficult psychologically for them. And we see that even in the U.S. Constitution. There is no mention of slavery, and that's because they knew it was wrong. So the more I looked at that fact, that they were hiding the evil that they were doing, I started to realize, okay, they knew that it was wrong. So then why did they allow themselves to do it? Why did they teach the rightness of it if they knew it was wrong? And that led to the next question, which was, why didn't they follow the Christian teachings that prevented them from doing it? Now, this is where it gets a little bit complicated, because Christianity clearly says treat others as you would like to be treated, and it doesn't really have much room for the practice of slavery. However, in the early part of Christianity, slavery was permitted in early Christian communities. But as those communities got older, they started to look deeper into the teachings of Christianity, and they realized we can't really justify holding slaves. So gradually, step by step, the Christian communities let go of slavery and really didn't practice it. By the time of the founding of the colonies in America, they were so far away from the original spirit of Christianity that they did not feel as much guilt, if I can just say it like that, in breaking those laws. The guilt was there, but it wasn't strong enough to withhold their hands from this golden egg, which was slavery. So they just went ahead and did it, and they brainwashed everybody after they set these laws, and they told them, this is all right, and they hired ministers to preach sermons in their churches saying, this is all right, this is in accordance with the Bible, and they hired scholars to interpret the Bible so that the words would seem to agree with the practice of slavery. They would pick out verses from the Old Testament which clearly stated how you are to treat your slave.
Hold on. Sure. So how you would treat someone who's enslaved or a slave became the justification in a way for doing it in the first place.
Yes, wow. Because we know in the Old Testament that slavery was condoned, but the Old Testament laws were clearly in favor of treating your slave in a humane way. So they twisted that to say, well, the Old Testament allows slavery, therefore, and that's the word of God, therefore we should be allowed to practice it as well. But what they did was they hid the New Testament teaching, which says treat everybody as you would like to be treated. So they just kind of did a bait and switch there. We're following the Bible, yes, in a way, but you're missing the spirit of the Bible. It's the spirit of treating others as you should be treated. And they knew that. This is the thing. They were aware of it, and that's what drove this feeling of guilt, and I think that feeling of guilt still plagues us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Mark, in maybe the 2 minutes that we have before our next break, it does bring up the question of, well, what spawned the likelihood that human beings would think that it's okay to have what we call bestial slavery, treating human beings as beasts? Was there something that happened before that would lead to this surge? What was embraced, or what was the violence that happened before that would justify racial violence?
Absolutely. It was a gradual process of what I call despiritualization. When Christianity came on the scene, as with any other religion, the spirit of the religion was quite strong, and people truly believed that the life of the soul was the key thing in our human life. But as time went on, as the centuries passed, the teaching and the spirit of Christianity faded away and left only the community and rituals. And so although people identified as Christian, they didn't really understand the spirit as much, and they were not as committed as much. And we see that in the world today. And by around the 1100s, the Christians were willing by that time to actually take up arms and fight Muslims in the Middle East to gain land and property and to establish themselves as wealthy landowners in what we now call Israel and Palestine and other lands on the way to Jerusalem. They claimed they were doing this to rescue Jerusalem from the hands of the infidels, the Muslims, but what they were really doing was gaining land. And they did the same thing in fighting sects of Christianity in the south of France, and they claimed these were infidels, and they went to cleanse the church of these infidels, but what they were really doing was a land grab.
You know, Mark, we're going to have to come back right after the break and pick up with land and prosperity or property. We'll be right back.
News. Opinion. Passion.
Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. Listen for MD Radio on the Voice America Variety Channel.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your host, Sean Ray, will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow. Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in Ask the Pros feature. And our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Being here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss being here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to our show today. Our guest, as you know, is Dr. Mark Perry, and the subject is The Last War, Racism and Spirituality. And, Mark, you have really helped connect the dots here on a trail that most people just don't know about. It's well-researched, and we've got so much more to cover. Before we went on break, you were talking about what happened around the 1100s and this whole idea about getting land and property and having it in such a way because it was in limited supply, I believe. Can you pick up from there and help us understand this particular segment of how we got into this awful mess and ditch?
Absolutely. So the Crusades started in that 12th century, 13th century period, and the key thing here is that the Catholic Church, which represented these beautiful teachings of Jesus to love one another and to treat everybody as you would like to be treated, that institution became militarized, and people were sent out in large numbers, armed, to supposedly cleanse the church of infidels and to cleanse Jerusalem of infidels. But what they were really doing was a big land grab, so that men who wanted to become estate holders could have large estates. The land in Europe was mostly spoken for, so the only easy way to really get good quality land was to go and practice the same conquering moves that the Romans had done. So here come the Crusades down to Jerusalem and then down to southern France and other places with extreme violence. And this is obviously contrary to the teachings of Jesus. He would never have approved such a thing. Mm-hmm. And so all of the people coming up in the Catholic Church during that time now were taught that such violence was acceptable in Christianity. And the next stage was the establishment of what we know as the Inquisition in Spain and a few other countries. And the Inquisition carried on this same extreme violence with torture and complete disregard for the sanctity of life. And that went on for many, many centuries, 4 or 5 centuries, this extreme fanaticism run by the officers of the church in direct contradiction of the spirit of Jesus' teachings. And so here's the entire civilization of Europe now controlled by an institution, the Catholic Church, that is practicing extreme violence on a regular basis, which then led to the witch hunts, and the witch hunts began around 1550 and lasted to about 1750. And for two centuries, women who were completely innocent, because we know witches don't exist, at least in my view, who were not following Satan, who were not representatives of the devil, they were singled out by accusers in so many towns and villages and cities throughout Europe and also in the colonies in the U.S. They were singled out as being bringers of evil, and they were interrogated and tortured and executed in the public square. And this terrified women across the entire society for over 200 years. And one scholar in a recent book said she firmly believes that even today, women in Europe are still under the shadow of that systematic terrorism. And so imagine if you were a little girl in a small town in Germany, and a woman who was completely innocent was grabbed and burned alive in the town square because she was accused of being a witch. That would terrorize you and all women and girls for miles and miles around for the rest of your life. And that's done in the name of the church. So this kind of extreme violence was the background that made the enslavement of foreigners a very easy thing to do.
Well, Dr. Perry, this is, I know that you've researched this. This is an extraordinary conclusion of connecting the dots, because is this to say that women were targeted and more so than males in this era of witch hunts, especially in Europe and the colonies here, more than males?
Well, this part is not real clear, because not nearly enough research has been done on the witch hunts. But my understanding of it is this, that as the Renaissance came up in the 1400s, 1500s especially, women were rising with the Renaissance. They were getting educated. They were becoming artists and accomplished scholars. And they were also becoming business people. They had businesses running shops, and they were midwives, and they were becoming very, very accomplished experts in what we would now call medicine. They were not only delivering babies, but they were understanding how the body functions, and they were understanding basic medicines from nature and so on, and they were making careers out of it. So as midwives, they were at the beginning of life, at the births, and they were also called to come at the end of life. They were asked to take care of the bodies of people who were deceased. And this was a direct competition to the priests in the local town. The priests were supposed to be the ones who oversaw life and death, but the midwives were actually the ones who knew more about the practical issues of birth and death. So this was a great, great threat to the traditional male structure of the priesthood. And so it was easy for the priests to go along with any accusation against females particularly. So about 90-some percent of all witches were female. There were some males, but most of them were females, and I think it's because they posed a great threat to the traditional priesthood and the traditional male-dominated economy.
Well, this brings up another question about racism and the other isms, like sexism.
Right.
Racism, classism, and this deadly embrace, it seems like, of these elements that way. So is this to say that with the research that you know about and have done, that the predecessor to bestial slavery had very much to do with how women, in this case, were treated? Well, were these women associated somehow with land or prosperity?
Yeah. Yes, they were. Most of the women who were, I don't know if I can say most, but a very large percentage at least of the women who were accused of being witches actually owned property, significant property, and were good targets for accusers, because it turns out that the accuser of a witch would often receive a portion or all of the property of the witch once she was killed.
So oh my gosh.
That was a big incentive. So here you have a very materialistic society favoring men and encouraging them to go to extreme lengths to get property from women who were considered evil. And one of the other things I read was that women were described, women who were accused of being witches were described in very similar terms that were used to describe Africans. They were bodily different. They had evil smells. Their faces were ugly, and they were associated so closely with the devil, with Satan. And that's exactly how slaves were described, and that was the justification for enslaving Africans.
Well, I tell you, we could spend another 15 or 20 minutes on this particular, way of looking at what spawned or what was the predecessor to allowing or to somehow galvanizing a large number of people, primarily European Americans in this case, or Europeans, to have a form of slavery that was really, I mean, this is putting, slavery on speed here, hyper-slavery
right.
for bestial purposes. And I think that many of our listeners would know about the economics of slavery, and maybe we don't have to spend a whole lot of time with that part of it. But I am very intrigued with the little time that we have left, actually. I'm very intrigued by how to untangle this web a bit. And, were there any other drivers, before we do that, that really rationalize this form of bestial slavery and especially this so-called no race mixing? When did that become such a huge issue?
Yeah. When the colonies were founded here in America, it was based on this newfangled thing called capitalism. And so they were growing the tobacco and other cash crops to make a profit in selling the stuff back in Europe. So here, they weren't simply having slaves to have a comfortable life. They were having slaves to make money. And that meant they needed to drive the slaves as fast as possible and as hard as possible to maximize their crop, to maximize their profit, and to keep doing that year after year after year. Originally, slaves were allowed to have their children go free. Only the parent was the slave.
Mm.
But then they changed the law so that the slave was forever a slave and the children were forever slaves. And that would be the same process that a farmer would have. The calves of the cow would belong to the farmer, not let go free. So this was a capitalistic approach to these human beings. They belong to me, and they increase my profit and my capital. So as things became more capitalized, the attitude towards the Africans became much, much more materialized and much, much less spiritual. In fact, the spirituality was erased from the scene.
Well, this is an extraordinary body of research that you have in your book, and I've read most of it. And this is the kind of book where I can't read it in one setting. It's just not possible because of the depths of the research, number one, and for the models that you're bringing forward, it's just not possible. And so I just want to make a real quick summary here, if I could, before we go on break, because in the beginning, it seemed that there wasn't a colorized world that involved racism in the Roman and Greek Empire. That seems to be block number one as we connect these dots and decode some of this.
Right.
And then secondly, because of the land shortages and because of the turn in after a while with Christianity, no blame, no shame, it just is what it is with any religion, the twist and turn of that and the ability to start the Crusades and to militarize that, which spawned also this type of crusades, which eventually spawned women, or mostly women, being targeted as witches and taking the land and money, for the most part, from those who were wealthy. And then we get to this country and religion basically saying at some point, some people are human and some people just aren't. And then it all has to do with, in the end, with capitalism and the colonies wanting to really promote more money and material.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, guess what? We're going to be right back with Professor and Dr. Mark Perry in just a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen to the women's side of the fitness industry on Fitness RX Radio. If you're looking to stay healthy and look great, or are getting ready to compete athletically, this is the show for you. We'll look at competitions from the inside out, bring you fitness tips, nutrition to keep you on top of your game, and so much more. We want to hear from you, too, and we'll take your questions by phone or email. Tune in to Fitness RX Radio, airing every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. Look and feel your best. Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Ask the experts. Call toll free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. Tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to our show. Once again, our guest today is Dr. and Professor Mark Perry, and we have been talking at length about his book and the subject matter, The Last War, Racism and Spirituality. Are those the last wars? Well, we just made our way through connecting some of the dots that led to bestial slavery, and now we want to kind of take a turn here a bit and see maybe some of these drivers, and maybe they can help us. I don't know. Politics, can politics really get us out of this ditch we got ourselves into, especially with this hyper-racism? Is it the legal system? Can the legal system do it for us? And what about this thriving materialism that many of us seem to enjoy? Maybe it has a really downside to it. Or can religion alone do this? I'm not sure. Well, Dr. Perry, what do you think the chances are of some of these institutions like politics and legal and this capitalism and materialism helping us out here to get out of this ditch?
Well, I guess I'd say it's an all of the above kind of answer, but with the added element which tends to be missing from policy, and that is a spiritual approach to the problem. I wanted to just point out that all of the people that had been enslaved or treated as infidels were first defined as outside the Christian community. So the Muslims were infidels. They were outside. The heretics in southern France were outside the true church. The Jews were outside, so they were subject to the Inquisition. And the witches, of course, were considered not true Christians. They were enemies of the church. And then Africans were not Christian. They were either Muslims or following pagan religions, so they were outside. And that made them, according to the mindset in those days, that made them fair pickings. They were legitimate enemies of the church, so they could be used any way that we wanted to use them. Well, we have to reverse that now and say all human beings are spiritualized. They are all sacred. And it doesn't really matter whether we all have the same religion or not, or whether we have no religion. We have to treat all human beings as sacred. So one of the straightforward principles we have to establish is that this sanctity of all human beings has to be taught in the schools. And funny enough, we're not teaching that. And that has dawned on me gradually over the last few years. We are not teaching anything like that. We're teaching kind of human rights ideas and so on, but you will not find schools say to the children, all the human race is one family. Mm-hmm. And once we start accepting that principle and teaching it in the schools, we've won half the battle. And then the second part is we have to have laws that basically say racism is a violation of our law. And if you commit racist acts, you will be arrested and prosecuted, as with any other violation of our laws. Right now, we allow racism. We think that that's, you know, an aspect of free speech. We think that that's an aspect of freedom of thought and so on. And although it may sound very radical for me to say racism should not be permitted, it should be outlawed, we do outlaw certain things. And other countries are also outlawing. Like in Germany, you cannot practice Nazi beliefs. You cannot express yourself in that way. That is against the law. Mm-hmm. And we should look at that as a model of how we can actually start to unravel this thing. But we cannot do it unless we have a spiritual commitment to it. And that's sort of what's been missing. We've been changing policies. We've been trying different strategies, economic, you know, strategies. And none of them have worked. Not a single one has worked. Even the civil rights movement was successful only in part, and then we've been slipping back. It's because we've never really faced that final part of the whole problem, which is the spiritual aspect. And that's why I called it the last war, because it's really a war within ourselves.
Well, I tell you, Dr. Perry, see, now I've got about 50 more questions. Let me start, though, because, you know, this whole idea and notion of how to put in place some very elemental, not elementary, but elemental things, such as that to teach that we're all basically part of the same species, to teach that. You know, I've run into so many situations where people might believe it in their head, you know, the physical part of, you know, anybody can can have a blood transfusion. So we know that many members of our human family can have a blood transfusion to another member. And the only reason that we can do that, regardless of race, is that we're part of the same species.
Right.
So people, it seems like that intellectually, That's clear, but emotionally, if not, as you say, spiritually or in the spirit of this, it can be a very different matter. So to teach this, that we're part of the same species, would be not only revolutionary, but evolutionary for us too. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And, you know, for the life of me, it never occurred to me on your second point that Germany actually has a law that prohibits Nazi belief system?
Right. You cannot practice Nazism in Germany. That is strictly, you know, prohibited, and people get in trouble. They try to do it secretly, but if you're caught, you know, you will face prosecution and get into serious trouble. So they try to find different ways to get around that. But I think that in the United States, we have a great opportunity to change our approach to this whole thing in the schools. We have an opportunity to change our, you know, people say you cannot legislate morality. You cannot make laws about how people's hearts are. Well, I beg to differ, because the beginning of racism in the United States was nothing but a set of laws in Virginia and Maryland. Mm. And those laws were strictly enforced, and that changed people's hearts because they were afraid of breaking those laws. They knew they would get in trouble if they married somebody of another race. Mm-hmm. So we can do the same thing, but in the reverse. We have a law that says we are protecting people no matter what their race, we believe in the unity of the human race, and anybody who disagrees and acts on that disagreement will face prosecution. You can change people's hearts with legislation. Now, that doesn't mean overnight everybody's going to change their hearts. You know, we have these anti-smoking laws that nobody thought was going to be possible, and yet here they are. Some people sneak a cigarette, no problem. That's not going to change that much. Not everybody's going to get rid of racism in their hearts overnight. But the majority of people, I think, are ready for it. And I think that all it needs now is the governmental leaders to just say, all right, we are ready for it. Let's put it into practical action. And I think it will be very easy for the majority of the people just to follow right along with that.
Well, you know, this you've opened up a whole new body of work. This is a whole new kettle of fish, Dr. Perry, because, you know, the moment that you said and was talking about that, okay, well, if you can make the laws, you can make counter laws that
right.
really are a remedy for bad laws to begin with.
Right.
And quite frankly, I didn't think that you could write any more laws related to racism. Honestly, I've said many times on this show as well, you can't write any more laws. And here, Dr. Perry, you come along and show us a way.
Well, I don't know if I'm showing the way, but I'm raising the issue.
Well, it's a very important issue because it seems to be maybe laws that are related to how we are to not only obey, but how we're to behave in a way for our own good.
Absolutely.
For the good of the whole culture. Well, this has just been extraordinary, and I want to leave maybe in the 30 seconds that we have here, maybe your comment. You said that this is the last war.
Yeah.
Right? And you said
right.
why this is the last war. Can you just summarize in 30 seconds, why is this the last war?
Well, growing up and seeing all the various social problems in this country as I was getting older, it seemed to me that the one problem that seemed to be the most difficult and the most painful for Americans was the issue of race. And it seemed to me if we were courageous enough, we would eventually face this. And I say it's the last one because it's the one that frightens us the most. But I think also very optimistically that the more courageously we do face it, the quicker we will be able to solve not only the racial problem, but almost all other problems, since it seems to be blocking our action in almost every field.
Dr. Mark Perry, thank you so much for joining us today. And your book is The Last War, Racism, Spirituality, and the Future of Civilization. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.